I would like to add two verses to our readings this morning. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. And from the Gospel of Luke. As he drew near to Jericho, a blind man was sitting by the roadside begging. And hearing the multitude going by, he inquired what this meant. They told him, "Jesus of Nazareth is passing by." And he cried, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." And those who were in the front rebuked him, telling him to be silent. But he called out all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." And Jesus stopped, commanded him to be brought to him. And when he came near, he asked him, "What do you want me to do for you?" He said, "Lord, let me receive my sight." And Jesus said to him, "Receive your sight. Your faith has saved you." And immediately he received his sight and followed him, glorifying God. And all the people, when they saw it, gave praise to God. May God add his blessing to these readings from his holy word. Faith is a many-splendored thing. The author of Hebrews opens his discussion of faith by saying, faith is the assurance, the hypostasis of things hoped for. This great Greek word has to do with a foundation on which something is built, on which it stands. Faith is also the conviction of things not seen. Faith is the alekhos, the proof or evidence requiring thoughtful cross-examination of things not seen. C.H. Dodd has written, "Faith gives to things future all the reality of actual present existence and brings us into their presence." Throughout the scriptures, the word faith appears in strange places. The woman in the house of Simon appears, washes the feet of Jesus, and at the end of the story, Jesus says, does not say, "Your actions are noble, worthy of commendation." Rather, he says, "Go in peace, your faith has saved you." What faith? She doesn't say anything. In the stories of healing, this phrase, "your faith has saved you," comes again and again. How are we to understand the nature of faith? In Paul's letter to the Romans, he provides a significant clue. In chapter 14, Paul writes, "Whatever does not proceed from faith is sin." We expect him to say, "Whatever does not proceed from faith is unbelief." He doesn't. For Paul, the opposite of faith is not unbelief, it's sin. He doesn't mean that it is a sin not to believe, because that's not what he says. For him, the opposite of faith is sin. In like manner, in the beginning of the letter of Romans, he has a statement about his own calling, and he writes, "We have received grace and apostleship to bring about the obedience of faith." The genitive used here is called a genitive of apposition. It means the obedience which is faith. In chapter 15, Paul speaks of his task, which is to win obedience from the Gentiles by word and deed. We expect him to talk about bringing the Gentiles to faith. No, he says he is engaged in bringing the Gentiles to obedience. What does Paul mean by this striking language? Simply put, for Paul, the word faith and the word obedience are almost interchangeable. The first triggers the second, And yet they can be almost described as a single reality. The things I believe are the things I act upon. I believe I'm 10 pounds overweight and should not eat anything between meals. But actually, you know, before supper, before I go to bed, I usually have, you know, something just really very small. You're lying, Bailey. You don't believe it. If you believed it, you would act upon it. On a hot summer day, I tell you I'm planning to spend the day sunning and swimming at the local swimming pool. You see me that same evening, and I am as pale as I was in the morning, and you say to me, "Oh, Ken, I see you didn't make it to the pool." And I reply, "No, no, I was at the pool all day long." "Well, okay, so where is the sunburn?" you ask. "Oh, yes, well, that. I'm really too busy this week, and I'm planning on dealing with the sunburn next week." You're lying, Bailey. No sunburn equals no sun. Yes, you can say the sun strikes my face and then my face turns red. Fair enough. The first causes the second, but in fact they happen together. My left hand strikes my right hand. The right hand accepts the movement of the left hand and there is a sound. But the striking of the hand and the emission of the sound happen together. God's truth is revealed to me. I accept it intellectually. And my acceptance of it causes a response, and the response is the sound. No, it doesn't work that way. We are dealing with mysteries, yet reflection on those mysteries can enlighten our path. Faith is at least composed of three elements. These are intellectual assent to truth, a response in obedience, and a daily walk of trust. Perhaps the intellectual assent fuses with the response in obedience and produces the daily walk of trust. Sometimes these three components are indistinguishable in the wonder of the life of the Spirit. Yet, let us briefly try to trace these three components through the three passages which we heard this morning. First, the life of David, as expressed in the 23rd Psalm. Does the Psalm model intellectual assent? It does. The Psalm opens with the familiar words, "The Lord is my shepherd." This is a confession of faith. In that Psalm, David could have said, "The Lord is my king." Then the reader would have looked to a political institution to understand faith and find security. He could have said, "The Lord is my commander." Then the military would have been an image for faith in God, but instead he affirmed, "The Lord is my shepherd." Shepherds lead their sheep into uninhabited places in the open wilderness where there are no cell phones, no helicopter surveillance systems, and no desert patrols. The appearance of a full-grown lion or two thieves with heavy sticks would put the shepherd and the flock in great danger. The language David chooses is worth a serious reflection. It means, at the very least, I do not rely on police protection for my security. Because in the open wilderness, there are no police. I know. I have traveled the open desert for days on camelback. For 40 years, I was privileged to serve in the Middle East through 7 wars, and I claim no particular virtue for what I want to say, and I imply no criticism. Fortress America meant and means nothing to me because I lived my life outside of its bounds. When 9/11 occurred, the penetration of that fortress did not frighten me because I had never experienced its protection. David did not find his security in political institutions or in the military or in the strength of the economy. He found it in the Lord. So much for intellectual assent. Is there also a response of obedience? There is. The shepherd leads, but the sheep have to follow. The text says, he leads me beside the still waters. He causes me to lie down in green pastures. He cannot lead me beside still waters unless I obediently follow him. Intellectual assent to his leading as my shepherd and my obedience in following fuse in a deep and abiding sense of security. The summer of 1982, with my family, I was living in Beirut, Lebanon. That summer, the Israelis invaded the country, and after a few weeks of living hell, the city of Beirut was under air and land and sea attack. After a few harrowing days, living as civilians in the midst of a major battle, we managed to evacuate to the island of Cyprus. On the way out of Beirut, I asked His Holiness Karakin II, whom I visited, the Patriarch of all Armenians, and I said to him, Your Grace, in 2 weeks I will be flying to America and will be speaking to various church gatherings. Do you have any word for me to take to the Christians in America? He paused briefly and replied, Tell them our world is like the ocean. Today, on the surface of our ocean, a violent storm is raging. But in the great deeps, all is calm. Karakin II did not find the quiet waters on vacation in a cabin in the woods with no telephone, isolated from the tyranny of his email. He was following his shepherd who led him to the still waters in the great deeps in the midst of a violent storm. Does David express the daily walk of trust? He does. I will dwell in the house of the Lord, li'orich yamim, the length of the days. Does it mean God's days or my days? King James Version read it as meaning God's days and translated forever. More recent translators have opted for our days and rendered my life long. The Hebrew text does not choose between them. Can we not affirm them both? David says, I will dwell in the house of the Lord. He doesn't move into the temple and set up housekeeping there in the back. Rather, wherever he goes, he is in the house of the Lord. Karakin II understood. Second, our story, we read of the blind man beside the road begging. He hears a crowd going by, asks about its purpose, is told that Jesus of Nazareth is the cause. He cries out, Son of David, have mercy on me. The crowd tells him to shut up and sit down because Jesus doesn't have time for people like him. And then Jesus turns to the crowd and orders them to become the courtiers to present the guest to the king. It's a nice touch. And when he has him in front of him, he says, What do you want me to do for you? Well, he's blind, isn't he? Jesus is giving him an exam. Grace is free, but it's not cheap. This man has no education, and he's got no track record, and he's got no skills, and no employment, and people will give to him as long as he's blind. But once healed, he's not going to get a plug nickel from anybody. Isn't he better off to stay blind? Do you want to be healed? What can I do for you? It's an exam. He passes the exam. I want to see. Medieval Arabic versions say, I want to see that I might see you. Nice little Christological flourish. It's not in the text, but I like it anyway. Jesus examines him and says to him, Your faith has saved you. What faith is Jesus talking about? The blind man has demonstrated intellectual assent to Jesus as the Messiah, that Jesus has the power to heal, and that he has compassion for marginalized beggars like him. He demonstrates a daily walk of trust. In his obedience, he is willing to follow Jesus in the way. His daily walk of trust is his willingness to accept responsibility of a seeing person. He is willing to start out on a new path like Abraham. Finally, let us trace these three components of faith in the great text in Hebrews before us. The text reads, "By faith we understand that the world was created by the word of God." That is, the author believed that the world did not appear as a result of the mating of pagan and female and male gods, which was affirmed by the ancient mythologies of both East and West. The text continues, "By faith we believe that what is seen is made out of things that do not appear." This is against Plato and the Greeks, who taught that God took some kind of pre-existent Play-Doh and shaped it into the world as we know it. The author also affirms, "Whoever would draw near to God must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who seek him." All these are intellectual assent to components of faith. But what about the obedience and the daily walk of trust? Here we would turn to Abraham and what the text says about him. Abraham, we're told upfront, be obeyed when he was called to go out to a place which he was to receive as an inheritance. Abraham did not sign a confession of faith, fold up the paper, put it in his pocket, and proudly announce, I am now the father of the faithful. God called, he obeyed by leaving his home, his land, his nation, and extended family. His intellectual assent triggered a costly response in obedience, which was a critical component in his faith. He also exhibited a daily walk of trust. His security was not found in where he lived or where he was going. It was found in the one whom he was following. Literally, we are told, he made himself a foreigner in the land of promise and lived there as in a foreign land. He de-absolutized his nationality, his citizenship, his participation in the, so that he might participate in the foundation of the city whose builder and maker is God. He found his security in a daily journey of trust that gave him foundations deeper than the security of citizenship, even in the land of promise. This was his faith. In faith, like David, we are called upon to find our security in following the shepherd into the insecure wilderness. In faith, like the blind man, we are invited to accept the responsibilities that accompany the gift of grace and follow Jesus on his way to Jerusalem and the cross. In faith, like Abraham, we are called upon to de-absolutize our nationalisms and our homelands with a deep existential sense of being foreigners seeking a better country whose maker and builder is God. Such are the challenges of the gift of the Spirit called faith. May we be found faithful to those challenges. Amen.